Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song, wind joyful ring.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Phantom Galaxy Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Bartleball. I'm joined here with Chris Durham. Chris?
Ho, ho, ho! Happy holidays, everybody!
Yes, we are here close to the eve of Christmas. Not quite there. We're the winter solstice.
Getting there. Got a little Christmas cheer.
On the winter solstice or the day after. And we're here tonight to talk about Christmas. Horror, science fiction, fantasy movies, probably mostly horror movies. I guess the barrel is scraped pretty, really thin for Christmas genre films, I think.
Yeah, it's not as much in the terms of like just straight up science fiction with Santa Claus.
Well, yeah. Like
unless you're talking Santa Claus versus the Martians.
Right. Well, Santa Claus versus the Martians, it's debatable if that's actually science fiction. There are indeed Martians. There is Santa Claus. But I would say that's probably even less science fiction than, say, Santa Claus the movie with, you know, or the Santa Claus with Tim Allen or something like that. I remember there was that Dudley Moore Santa Claus from like 1985 where John Lithgow was like an evil corporate guy or something that hired Dudley Moore, who was an elf who defected. But I remember that movie having an interesting opening because essentially Santa Claus was this kind toy maker who he and his wife and the reindeer get lost in the snow and freeze to death. And the elves resurrect him and make him immortal. It was a great, cool little opening. That's and then crazy. It turned into like a bad children's excuse to sell lunchboxes or something. So tonight, Chris and I are going to go through some of our favorite Christmas holiday themed movies that are genre related. We talked a little bit about this over on Pop Culture Ninja, although I don't think we discussed as much in regards to things that fall within the horror vein of things. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole subgenre of Christmas horror movies, although you and I spoke a little bit before we're recording tonight. And I feel like that falls a lot more into we want them to be good than they are.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the potential is high, but we can get into how successful that really is.
I mean, I have personally a shameful admission because I always considered like holiday horror movies to be kind of my thing. Like, I love them. But when I went down to look at like what have I really seen and write down the list, it's not as long of a list as I thought it was. Maybe it's just because I watch these movies every single year that I think that it's a broader.
You've got your go-tos and you just kind of stick with them. Well, so tonight, before we begin, I thought it would be kind of fun just to talk about personally what we both like about the holiday in relation to genre things. And then we'll go through a couple different movies. Chris, your favorite movie of all time is kind of a Christmas horror movie, sort of, in a kid's sense.
And it's, I know, that's my great hypocrisy because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of children's films. And yet one of my favorites is The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well, I think that just proves how good it is. It overcame your prejudice to burrow its way deep into your heart. I love The Nightmare Before Christmas. We saw it at Halloween with the BSO.
Yeah, that was
perform
fantastic.
Music next to it. Yeah. That was really cool. That's when I was talking on the podcast crossover for Pop Culture Ninja and These Go to 11, we were discussing, it's so funny how a few of Burton's movies kind of cross over into that Christmas kind of slight sci-fi.
You've even got the Batman version.
Well, that's what we talked about. Batman Returns.
And it is a bit of a horror movie to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's definitely fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about, one thing I said about Batman Returns, and I think we can kind of probably even jump in as this is a point, I think one of the things that becomes difficult about having a Christmas subgenre when you talk about genre movies, particularly like horror, fantasy, and particularly when you talk fantasy and science fiction, Christmas is sort of its own thing. The mythologies, the ideas, the concepts that go with Christmas, whether you're looking at it from the spiritual angle or the kind of folklore Santa angle or even the commercialization angle, it's kind of, it's self-sustaining. It doesn't necessarily need all these other elements. It doesn't need extra fantasy from something else. You know, it doesn't need, the myth of Santa Claus ends up kind of being its own thing, but it doesn't quite verge into fantasy. You know, the Santa Claus, or the Santa Claus with Tim Allen is not, in my mind, really a fantasy movie, even though there are fantastical elements. He's Santa, the elves are there. But do you know what I mean? It doesn't really dovetail into what we would probably consider traditional fantasy elements.
Yeah.
Even It's a Wonderful Life is technically a fantasy, but I don't think it plays out that way so much. Mm-hmm. It's more of a drama. So I think that's probably why we have not a lot of Christmas-themed fantasy or science fiction, because it doesn't really dovetail a lot. When you do, it seems incidental, which is kind of Batman Returns. I don't even think of Tim Burton's Gotham City as having seasons. You know what I mean? Like...
It's always dark and
gloomy. It's later when Alex Proyas makes Dark City, he almost gives a reason for why these very artificial style movies are always dark. Like, there's a reason Dark City is cast at night all the time.
And a kind of brilliant.
Yeah, I won't go into that. That's a great film, not a Christmas movie. But so Batman Returns, when Burton very specifically sets this as Christmas, there's people singing carols, there's Christmas parties, there's a lot of Christmas paraphernalia. It's almost weird because in the first movie, I didn't ever get that Gotham City looked any different than just being dark and dank and creepy. So it's kind of weird that he brings Christmas into Batman Returns. And it kind of plays a role.
I feel like maybe they thought, we'll make it a blockbuster, but we'll also mix Christmas in to make it an even bigger blockbuster. I don't know. It was terribly successful with that.
Well, it was a... I mean,
that was before we really have big blockbuster... superhero movies, really. I mean,
it was still a big hit, and it came out at summer too. So that's the kind of thing there is. It was always supposed to be a big tentpole summer movie, but that's Burton. I mean, I think the Christmas thing was Burton's decision. But to make that point, isn't it interesting that you have Batman Returns, you have The Nightmare Before Christmas, and Edward Scissorhands has a very big Christmas contingent. So some of my favorite, like Tim Burton movies, I always kind of associate him with more like Halloween and that sort of kitsch, but he has a soft spot, I assume, for Christmas. I'm not sure where that comes from. I always kind of chalk Batman Returns Christmas up to kind of the precursor being Brazil by Terry Gilliam, which is probably one of my favorite genre movies that also kind of features Christmas. There are people who say it's a Christmas movie. I think it more takes place at Christmas. It's that sort of biting, satirical look at a world that's kind of like 1984 or... kind of Kafka-esque, kind of George Orwell, and a lot of Monty Python in there,
totally.
Too. But it takes place at Christmas, and there's a lot of very creepy Christmas imagery sometimes, lots of Santas leering into the frame. And another movie in a similar artificial bent, The City of Lost Children.
You're right,
Wynette opens up with that really creepy scene where the child is having a nightmare where all these Santas keep coming into his house and eating his food.
It's
and
so
drinking,
weird.
And the reindeers are pooping on the ground. So I think Christmas in itself, if you're a little bit cynical, if you're a little bit imaginative, Christmas just lends itself to being a little creepy, being a little out there.
It's a little magical to begin with. It's a little...
Yeah, and then fantasy... elements get in. I talked about this recently with Nathan. We were talking about how authors like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien both kind of drew on Santa Claus and different things. Lewis has him actually show up.
Yeah, Father Christmas.
He's like the one of the first signifiers that things are finally changing, because it used to be always winter, never Christmas in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And then Tolkien wrote, not that something is very... I don't think it's as well known to people that know him for Lord of the Rings. He wrote a series of letters from Father Christmas to his children and published them. It was like Letters from Father Christmas. So, I mean, both of those guys, and also Frank L. Baum wrote The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. I had Santa Claus Fighting Mountains roles.
Which was later turned into a claymation movie.
Right? It was, so we referenced that. So there's all that imagery, and there's all that like background folklore. Because a lot of Santa Claus is drawn from Odin, you know, who would ride across the sky.
On
a six-legged horse or something. And so the six-legged horse eventually became a sleigh and reindeer and all of that. And there's, of course, St. Nicholas. All that stuff gets mashed together. And, of course, in a lot of, like, Finland and stuff like that, you have the Yule Men, who are, like, the little trolls, like Meat Hook and...
The one thing I read recently that was interesting
to me. Spoon liquor.
When you talk back to about Odin, I think this is also like a Finland thing or something, where they have the Black Peters, the guys that are assistants to St. Nicholas.
Yes, to the Sinterklaas.
Yes, Sinterklaas. So they were like, they served the same purpose as kind of Odin's ravens that would sit outside the homes of mortals and repeat back to him what was going on in the mortals' homes. They would also kind of like sit outside your chimney and listen to you being bad or good. So it's kind of interesting. That's like similarities between Odin and
this. That's like, true. Weird... Odin's ravens are kind of like a precursor in a sense, or at least a an analog to Santa's elves.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I think most of the time we end up with horror movies.
Yes.
You know, in the Christmas
vein. Most of these are.
They are. And a year or two ago, when having the podcast, we were talking about the movies, and I said that it's interesting you think of the two problem. I think you could make the case that two of the most popular Christmas stories in terms of pop culture media are essentially ghost stories. I mean, obviously A Christmas Carol
yep.
is legitimately a ghost story. It was conceived as a ghost story. It was a ghost story first, Christmas story second. Totally. And in a certain sense, if you want to get kind of mind-bendy about it, I think A Wonderful Life is almost a ghost story.
It definitely is.
In a sense where you have a guy imagining, well, what if I never existed? And most of the time, he is doing what Scrooge is doing, where he's standing outside of his life. He has a supernatural figure with him, and he's observing his life without
him. I agree 100% about that.
So that's interesting. Something people think about that. They always like to think the happy, rosy element of Christmas. But two of the most popular stories have this bent, and they end happily, but they have some very dark crevices to them, are ghost stories. And there's a British tradition for telling ghost stories at Christmas. And we were talking about that. And even, we were talking recently, the classic song, you know, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, says there'll be scary ghost stories and things like that. So there's the ghost story element, the kind of like dark, sort of like the bittersweet element of Christmas, the fact that people are like, oh, it's a wonderful time of year. A lot of people kill themselves at Christmas. You know, yep. I don't mean that in a flippant way, but so not everyone's happy at Christmas time.
Exactly.
And some people have that bah humbug spirit, which is where
that happened to me tonight. I was out parking. I was trying to go get a couple of things before I came over and parking. And it was like a battlefield in the parking lots. And like on the radio, all of a sudden, Paint It Black, the song Paint It Black comes on. I was like, this fits the mood perfectly.
That's funny because I almost feel in my heart somewhere I would almost think Paint It Black is the ultimate Christmas song.
Kind of is.
I can just, the chord striking up as you enter. We'll be talking here, like, we'll
go to battle against your other consumers.
Films. Yeah. We'll talk about a recent horror film that opened with a musical number and a mall full of nuts. And I feel like Paint It Black could have perfectly been there as the doors open, hear the guitar. The guitar chords. So that explains the old smoky moonshine eggnog that's sitting in front of me.
It does.
This is the way to initiate a little bit of Christmas spirit. A
little bit of Christmas cheer, and it's actually pretty darn good.
Christmas spirits, I should say.
Right.
Yes.
It's basically what we said. It's eggnog flavored moonshine, and it not bad.
Is Old Smoky the brand here? Tennessee Moonshine? I'm going to say this is actually pretty good. I was talking to you. Eggnog is not really my thing. I think
neither is not mine either.
Part of it comes from the fact that I always go back to that scene in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation where Uncle Eddie is just like slurping it right out of the
thing.
Yes, exactly. And I'm like, oh, I can't quite. Or Clark's just got it running down his face. And, oh, that's good. That's good. So I'm like, There's also,
this is almost a Bailey's-y.
It does. Like, it doesn't have the aftertaste because there's always that kind of weird nutmeggy aftertaste to eggnog that for some reason triggers in my mind that like sticky, pasty, like cough syrup you had as a child that was like white and it would always kind of like coat the back of your throat and you would taste it for like
for
the
hours
of the afternoon. Yeah. No amount of ginger ale could wash it away. Yes. So
this has no such aftertaste.
No, it's actually very good. I like it.
It's a good
sip. Quite good. It's mellowed the mood out a little bit. You didn't roll up in here with mumming Paint It Black, so I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
So the Christmas horror scene. Where do you want to start, Chris?
You mentioned one recently, and we did lightly touch on it on another podcast, but I think if we talk about it, it's a recent film, you said, where people are doing battle in the retail store at the very beginning of this movie, Krampus from last year.
Yeah, which is probably one of the newer ones. I know a couple of low-budget Christmas horror movies that haven't many people even seen showed up this year. There was one called Good Tidings or Glad Tidings. Mm. Looked like another Evil Santa's. I'm getting a little tired of the evils because it seems like you can't do anything but Evil Santa. But Krampus was Michael Dougherty last year, 2015, came out just what right before The Force Awakens blew up the box office, so it had a week or two of some decent business for a horror movie, for a Christmas horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was PG-13.
Yeah.
And I saw it when it came out last year with you. We went to the theater to see it. And had a pretty big cast. I mean, considering the kind of movie it was, you know,
exactly.
An interesting cast.
Yeah.
Toni Collette, Adam Scott, very diverse in a sense. And
Koechner.
Yeah, David Koechner. I mean, not people that are necessarily like super well-known names, but a cast that was like, okay, you put some thought into this. It wasn't just like your...
People that could have a little bit of a bitter streak in them when they play these characters.
That's true, right? Like your Toni Collette, you're like, why is she doing in the Krampus movie? But I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. I have some thoughts we could delve into it. Like you said, on the feast episode, we talked a little bit about it. I want to address it more as a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
The other movie that Michael Dougherty's directed was Trick or Treat, which was a Halloween-themed movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that that movie is a better Halloween movie than Krampus is a Christmas movie.
I'll agree with you.
We can kind of delve into that. There's some similarities. Trick or Treat was also a multifaceted, in the sense that it was an anthology story that sort of was wrapped into itself so that everything interconnected and sort of referenced, each story referenced itself in some way. But Krampus, we saw it last year. We actually watched it just two nights ago as a double feature with Santa Sleigh.
Ooh, another classic.
Yeah, classic. And I enjoyed rewatching both of them, but I think that these are movies, particularly Krampus is a movie that benefits from that Bah Humbug spirit. Like,
it does.
That Bah Humbug, that when you're just fed up, like that point you said, when you've walked in the mall and you've dealt with the last grouchy customer, you've dealt with the last time someone tried to literally Mad Max you out of a parking space, or you're just tired of hearing somebody complain about whatever it is. You didn't write Christmas on my cup. Or, you know, when we get into that moment where all of our attempts at having goodwill towards men and women have fallen apart and are laying in ashes at our feet, it's usually this is a time for these movies.
And the time you break out the eggnog moonshine.
Exactly. So it felt like 2015 and a year or two before were when mainstream culture started to recognize Krampus, even though he's been around for literally thousands of years.
It's weird to me because I thought by now at least most people have heard of Krampus. But like, I was at work, and a little spoiler alert here: I'm going to be wearing a Krampus ugly sweater for Christmas this year. So just FYI,
it's a beautiful sweater. I've seen it.
But I was wearing that one day at work because our office is freezing. And I need a nice sweater. So anyway, I was wearing it at work. People were like, what is that? What is that? And I was like, Krampus. And they're like, what's Krampus? I had like five people do that to me at work. I was surprised. I thought by now it had gained enough notoriety, at least in the United States, from various movies and things and references, that people kind of knew.
Krampus. Yeah. But so we've had a couple of movies recently. There have been several low-budget movies before that. None of them particularly good. This is probably the most obvious one in terms of mainstream being out in the public. And it's a fun movie. You have that sense of almost like a Christmas Carol where you've got a bunch of people. It's almost like that mixed with National Lampoon's.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of family members who really don't like each other very much all jammed together in a house. Little boy tears up his letter to Santa Claus, and then Krampus, who is traditionally the kind of dark spirit of Christmas,
he's kind of the bad cop.
He is the bad cop's a good way to describe him, because he's not like this evil character, although sometimes he's portrayed that way, who's like fighting Santa Claus, the way some people, you know, it's God versus the devil, but then they kind of forget that like the devil supposedly has a role in God's plan. It's
true.
Sort of like Krampus has a role in Santa's whole shtick. Like, Santa's the guy who gets to reward you. Krampus hits you with switches. So, like, Santa's like, I'm not getting involved in that. You do that. Like, that's your job. He's the janitor, sort of.
You got the Pennsylvania Amish, and you got Belsnickel, who does both. So,
but Belsnickel, he's like a little more versatile. And I think he also has Russian ties. Surprise. yes. Breaking news. Belsnickel has Russian ties. And he puts the children into the sack. There's actually, up in PA, there's like a Christmas museum, and they have all these displays of Santa Clauses around the world, and you're looking at them, and they're all happy. And these are creepy, like, wax Santas. And you come around the one side of the Christmas tree, and there's Belsnickel putting a child's feet into the sack. And I'm like, well, equal opportunity. So, but you're right. In most traditional pictures of Krampus, Krampus is next to Santa Claus, mm-hmm. and there's Santa Claus handing out toys to the nice kids, and then Krampus is there. I don't. Typically, though, he also seems to be. He's a punisher, but he's also kind of the. I'm going to help you learn the lesson here. He has a purpose in the Christmas spirit, though. And a lot of the American films have sort of focused on this idea that oh, he like the boogeyman. If you're bad enough, you're going to get snatched up and taken to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So Krampus seems a little bit more like that avenging dark force. In the Michael Dougherty movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's halfway between, he seems to be there to maybe teach people a lesson about the spirit of Christmas, but the movie ends up kind of not being that much about Krampus, which I'm not going to go into many spoilers if you haven't seen. It's a fun movie. There's a lot of cool practical special effects. The cast is decent. I'd say that the comedy is not all that successful, I didn't think, in the first half. Like, there's some chuckles, but it's not like
there are some great chuckles. There's some similarities to Christmas Vacation, but it's not like that level of humor.
There's nothing that was laugh out loud funny to me, per se.
I'd say maybe only Aunt Dorothy, just because she's such a large abrasive force.
She had a couple, but chuckles, you know. But nothing that was like, there was no big funny scene in the movie. But to be fair, I don't know that Krampus is really a comedy.
No.
Like, it was kind of built that way. It's
kind of skirting the line a little bit.
It doesn't quite become a full-blown horror movie either. So, the one thing I'd say about it, it's a fun movie. I'd say go see it. I had mentioned somewhere else that, like, I feel like that ending of that movie is a litmus test. I'm not going to go into it here. It kind of really shows you which side are you on. Are you really the Bah Humbug, or do you really have a little bit of hope in your heart?
That's true.
And I was surprised with how I found myself. I think we found a little more hope than we expected.
I always considered myself more the Bah Humbug, but
I pointed out. I was like, look, so I'd be interested to hear what people think about the ending. I mean, some people think it's straightforward. Some people think it's purposely vague, which is what I think it ultimately is. But I think there's also enough there you can kind of figure out what's going on. There are some clues early on. I would pay attention to songs that are playing on the radio through the film. I would pay attention to movies that are playing on the television. I think those all give hints as to what the movie's actually
about.
Some
light cues, yeah.
Yeah. So here's the one thing I'll say, Chris, and I'll turn it over to you. My one issue I have with this movie, it feels like Krampus is almost just like a side character in this movie. I understand this isn't the life and adventures of Krampus.
Yeah.
I know he was always going to kind of be, but he's not even like a slasher character. He's not quite like Jason. He's not quite like Freddy. I know he's not.
He's literally, his minions are the bigger characters almost this whole movie.
Like, and that was kind of disappointing to me a little bit because I wanted to see more of him. He has these onslaught of monsters that all are from... You can almost, when you see them, you'll recognize them from other movies, in a sense. Like, you can kind of say, oh, I remember, you know, at one point I'm like, that's like Full Moon's demonic toys just rolled up in here. And then there's the gingerbread guys from, like, Shrek. You know what I mean? Like, any point these characters showed up, I'm like, I've seen these things before
somewhere else.
They weren't terrible, but they weren't that terribly interesting. As you get closer to the end of the movie and kind of see Krampus,
I think they're more effective when various, multiple different minions going at once. Like, there's a scene at one point where there's several different of the minions attacking, like, the family. And at that point, it's like, you're looking over here, something horrible is going on. You're looking over here, something horrible going on. It's all very kind of different looking. I think there it's actually very effective that way.
So that was my thing. I thought they shortchanged this a bit on Krampus. Krampus has, the way he plays in this movie, isn't that dreadfully different from the little Sam character, the little sack face guy from Trick or Treat.
Mm-hmm.
Though his character is sort of, he's meant to be almost on the sidelines. He probably actually has more screen time than Krampus, really, because he has a whole story for himself in Trick or Treat.
Krampus is really not in it much.
Yeah, they start to ramp into it. So I felt calling the movie Krampus and then having that little bit of him, it didn't affect me as much the first time, but watching it again, I'm like, it kind of feels fun, but kind of feels like a missed opportunity a little bit. What did you think about the way he looked, or the Krampus design?
I really liked the Krampus design. I had one problem with it, which I thought was kind of strange. Because it seems like as you're watching it, his mouth is agape the whole time. But it doesn't ever move. It looks kind of like set in stone almost in that way. Like they built a prosthetic for it, but they didn't put any kind of animation in it to me. It looked a little weird when everything else had so much detail to it. And they had this long, creepy tongue. I thought that was a cool little side piece they put in there, but... Just the fact that the mouth is always agape is kind of weird to me.
So I had a thought about that, and I thought this was my takeaway even the first time I saw it. I don't think
And I think we can kind of talk about this because the movie's been out for a while. Let's say there's just mild spoilers here because all we're really talking about is the way Krampus looks. We're not going to discuss the plot per se. But when you finally see him, and one of my favorite scenes is actually one of his first appearances. He's on the roof, this big hulking beastly shadow, and he's just jumping from roof to roof. And you don't see him very much throughout the movie. That was one of my favorite scenes, and that kind of gave me this feeling of, oh, we're really going to get this thing doing some stuff and terrorizing these people. And we didn't really get that because he kind of disappears and then comes back towards the very end. When you finally see him, you've got the giant cloak. You keep talking about, like, the movie does play him a little differently than mythology because they keep kind of referring to him almost as the Anti-Claus. Like, he's the shadow of St. Nicholas. The grandmother character actually says that. So when he comes out and when you finally get a look at him, I thought that that was a mask. I thought that Daugherty's implication is that he's wearing a mockery of a Santa Claus mask. And if you see
That's a very interesting perspective.
And the reason I think about that, and even this last time we watched it, when there's a point when a character is looking him in the face, and the tongue even comes out of the mouth, but it looks like it's coming through the mask. And towards the end, a character looks at him very closely, and you see what to me look like large reptilian eyes set inside the Santa mask. So I get the feeling that Daugherty's version of this is he's a giant monster. Wherever he came from, he's not like Santa Claus at all. He's a thing that pretending to wear the Santa Claus mask.
That is something that is blowing my mind right now. That could totally be the case.
Because when I looked at it again, that's what it really looked like. Because some of his minions also wear masks. So they're all disguised. His minions are clearly creatures. They remind me of things from Legend almost, but they're clearly disguised as a mockery of Santa's elves, and then which kind of follows suit that Krampus is a mockery of Santa Claus. So, and I feel like too, so for the sake of a sequel, they're kind of saying, "Hey, we don't know what's behind the mask." This is where you get Jason or Michael Myers, like, "Oh, Krampus is just wearing a Santa Claus costume, much like some of these other guys we're going to talk
about." Well, it's interesting because I mean, he does have like the cloven hooves and everything,
right? He's like, clearly he's a monster.
If you're why looking would he at look the like an old man, old traditional Krampus images, you know, he's like a crazy hairy demon thing.
But when they show his like reptile eyes, he definitely has like those eyes that seem to close from the side or something. And I thought, that's a monster pretending to be like a Santa.
That is interesting. I like that. I like that a lot.
So, yeah, and it's a fun movie. I'd say I'd recommend it. Since we're on PG-13 horror movies, you want to talk Gremlins a little bit?
Yes, let's talk Gremlins. I was going to roll into Santa's Sleigh only because we mentioned Santa's Sleigh, but we were talking about how the problem with Krampus is Krampus isn't in it much. You can't say this about Santa's Sleigh for all its faults.
You get a lot of Santa. I think Santa's Sleigh would be a good one. We can go in. Let's go Gremlins, Rare Exports, and then we'll hit Santa's Sleigh.
I like
Seems
it.
It's like cool.
Gremlins. I actually just watched this last night, and man, I love that movie. It's so nostalgic for me when I watch it.
It is nostalgic. I kind of feel like if I had never seen it before, though, and I saw it just now, I would still love it. I think I would.
It's still really effective and a great movie. Like, exactly right. Like, if I had never seen it before, I'm like, this is one of my favorite movies of the year.
That's a great mix of Christmas cheer and Bah Humbug mixed together.
With
a little Halloween. It keeps referencing, it's almost like a spoof of a Spielberg movie.
It is. Like, very much so.
Joe Dante is probably, like you talk about nostalgia. I love Joe Dante. I love his movies. I love The Burbs. I love Interspace. I love Piranha, even. I like The Howling. I mean, I like most of what he's done. Some of his recent movies have not been great. But in general, Joe Dante, I like what he does. And I like his weird kind of... He's definitely a film buff. He's seen a lot of movies. He's seen a lot of old 50s movies and loves old 50s movies. And Gremlins is kind of like an old 50s horror movie in a way. Gremlins has some similarities to something like The Blob or something in a way.
A little bit.
Like a small town attacked by some kind of horrible menace.
That definitely feels like the director's nostalgia for that time period. Like he's remembering something about his youth almost in the
town. Making fun of it at the same time. Like that Norman Rockwellian, like picturesque little village that's just torn apart.
And it's filled with like the literary classics too. I mean, you've got your Scrooge character in there. It's the like little old lady who basically runs the town, and she's like this heartless woman.
I think I just saw her. I could be off on this. I think I saw her in Black Christmas, which we can talk a little bit about, the old 1974 Black Christmas. And I was like, there's Mrs. Deagle. So the two Christmas.
I always got like a little bit of a Wizard of Oz vibe from it, too.
From the Gremlins?
Yes.
Well, aren't they? They are watching Wizard of Oz, aren't they?
No, that in the theater, they're watching Snow White.
Oh, you're right, Snow White.
Because they do the song where they're like, hi ho, hi ho.
I thought, I couldn't remember. You're right, it was hi ho. I should know this, because we watched it not long ago either. The thing I love about Gremlins is you got the cute little, like, we're going to sell toys character in Gizmo, and he's cute and he's adorable. And then
I want one.
Right. Yeah. But then, and also too, is that like this 1980s? It's like it came from Asia. Now it looked cute and it looked wonderful, but now it's gone rampant and destroyed us. And it was like the last some vestiges of our like foreign fear there coming out. But that's kind of spoofed in the movie with Futterman going around talking about the foreign cars that got the gremlins inside of him, and he's always kicking things.
Kind of made to look like an ass. Yeah.
Dick Miller, I think he has been in every single one of Dante's movies. You know, he's still alive.
Really?
Dick Miller's still alive. Kicking around. Yep. They did a documentary, I think, called, like, I Am Dick Miller or something like a year or two. It was actually pretty good.
I'll have to check that out.
You know, too, something and this is mild spoilers, I guess, for Gremlins. I never, because Gremlins 2 came out later, I never realized in some ways how dark Gremlins gets. Like, they definitely imply that the Futtermans get killed.
Murdered.
In Gremlins. Yeah. Murdered.
But a lot of people getting killed in that movie.
They don't get murdered because they come back in Gremlins 2 and you realize, oh, they just knocked their house
over. Yeah, at a certain point, like, as I was watching, I was like, I don't remember them getting killed off. And because it definitely ends like that. And then at some point, the cop, they're in the police department, the cop's like, oh, we got a report.
A horrible Futtermans. Accident. Yeah.
It's a very dark movie. I mean, even when we're talking about, like, this cute, lovable creature, and then all of a sudden it, you know, has the ability to spawn these more evil versions of itself. If you don't obey the rules, there'll be more evil versions of themselves. And they're, like, running around committing homicides. But then you've got the, like, badass mom in the house, like, fighting against these creatures. At one point where Billy's away, and the gremlins come to play with mom, and she's just, like, putting them in the blender.
She goes Die Hard on them a little bit. That's an awesome scene, and that's like the highlight of the movie. And there you have the suburban house mom striking back with her modern gadgets.
And she's awesome.
Against these interfering little monsters that are trying to destroy Christmas. That's really awesome. And you're right, it's exciting. Plus, the thing about it, if I'm not mistaken, you see Gizmo. Then you see the other Mogwais that are kind of evil, and they're eating that chicken like little animals.
They just have little evil personalities, but you don't know what they're going to do just yet.
Then you see the pods. Yes. Then they hatch. You see a couple like hands. You hear some shadows. You see them run around. But if I'm not mistaken, you don't see a gremlin on screen until she walks into the kitchen, and he's sitting there eating out of the bowl or something.
Yeah.
Like, you get a couple. There's one in this classroom, but you don't see him. You just know he's kind of there. And it dawns on me, like, that's the moment when things ramp up. So that's the moment, the first time you see the gremlin, the monster, and he's supposed to have a lot of menace, and it's fully on screen. The minute it shows up, it's fighting the mom. And it's an interesting choice. It's a
pretty scary little creature, too.
They are, but it's an interesting choice that a few seconds after they show up, she obliterates them. Like, in most movies, and this is where I think the Jonte satiricalness comes in, most movies would want your monster to seem like a major threat, and it would have them meet the mother.
Mm-hmm.
They've just on screen. You see how creepy they really are. But it's more like once she shows them to you, you're like, look, they're creepy, but they're kind of funny and weird, too.
They're more
and
then mischievous.
She tears them apart. And she, like, the reason the movie's rated PG-13, I'm pretty certain, at least back in 84, that they made such a deal about it, is that scene. Because the most violence in the movie is her, like, sticking them in the microwave, sticking them in the blender. And now that scene seems really tame. Like, I don't even... Like, Gremlins is a PG-13, but it's barely a PG. Like, it's like a PG-8. You know what I mean? It could be. I mean, I might be overdoing it a little bit, but I don't think it's really all that scary.
It's not terribly strong, no.
Yeah. And they're very stop-motion-y little monsters, but I like them.
There is a point, though, it's funny because you'll see them... They're all little alcoholics in the bar, like, drinking up and, like, smoking and shooting.
And they're referencing,
like,
famous, like, gangster movies
stuff.
And there's even a Flasher gremlin, if I remember correctly.
There was.
So two things I want to talk about. Last thing about Gremlins, and we'll move on. So one thing you just mentioned, it dawns on me. the rules, like, don't get them wet, don't mm-hmm. do this. A lot of Christmas movies, Krampus included, and even Christmas Story, they're it's that morality, that based on, it's funny because Christmas supposed to be this time of generosity and
absolutely.
Giving.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you can't violate the rules. You can't, it's...
It all ties together,
the
exactly.
moralistic sort of underpinning of Christmas is don't get out of line.
And that's the basic pinning of pretty much most horror movies that I can think
right,
of.
Right, so the Christmas and horror maybe do go together. That's maybe the reason that Christmas isn't great for some people, because if you're not conforming to the happiness, you're with the gremlins.
Yep.
So the other one, which kind of dovetails with that, is the Phoebe Cates character is really just not into Christmas. And she's very adamant that, why should I be in Christmas?
That is one of the weirdest moments in cinema to me, what she's talking about. That.
Yeah, where she tells this story that's extraordinarily
horrifying.
Dark, very poignant, but it is scarier, creepier. And when I was a kid, more disturbing than the Gremlins. When I
100%.
When I like went to sleep that night, I was thinking about that story she tells, not about what the Gremlins
are
doing.
This is why I hate Christmas.
And I don't... if people haven't seen that, they should check it out. But yeah, Gremlins is probably my favorite Christmas horror movie.
Yes.
We're going to say Christmas horror movies. It's pretty darn good.
It is great.
So I think we can segue into that. It's not a PG-13 horror movie. I think mostly due to a lot of old Icelandic man nudity.
You're absolutely right.
But I'd still say it's almost for kids. That might get
that
me into
so
hot water.
Strange. It is like, it definitely, I would.
This is not Gremlins, by the way. We're segueing.
This next movie, I could say definitely being easily a PG-13 if it weren't for the fact that there's all these old naked men like running around the woods.
But it's
not explicitly,
tasteful, I promise.
Yeah. Not like explicitly, like you're watching and all of a sudden it's focusing on a bunch of like old man stuff. But it's a great movie regardless. Although I showed this to a friend of mine one time, and I'm not allowed to pick movies there anymore. So,
well, they shouldn't be your friends then.
You're right.
This movie is Rare Exports, A Christmas Story.
Oh,
Christmas Tale. And it came out, 2010, I'm thinking.
Yep.
And this is it's a Laplandic film. It was based off a couple short films that I think you could still find on Vimeo, which are very funny.
Yeah, they are.
The short films are pretty great. The only
you can watch it without having seen them.
I'd almost think maybe you should, because I recently showed this to some friends.
That's how I did it. I had never seen them before I watched the movie.
Because I think in some ways the short films will still be funny once you've seen the movie. But if you don't know anything about Rare Exports right now, you're just listening to us talk, we're not going to spoil anything here, not anything big. Go see it. Avoid the short films, because I feel like everyone I used to show the short films to and then the movie came out and then they watched the movie still enjoyed the movie, but you get a little extra kick, I think, by not having seen the short films, because essentially what happens is...
You just don't know what's about to hit you over
the
head.
They make this huge movie and they use the short film as a basis, but they're not like they're not taking the short film and turning it into a feature length. It's like they're taking one element of it and building it into a whole other story. Mm-hmm. But, Chris, did you want to set this one up a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, this to me almost feels a little bit like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, in that it's kind of a kid's adventure movie, although it is rated R. That one was also kind of like Kids in Peril, but yet it's kind of adventurous.
The R seems honestly a bit strong for this one.
Except for, like we said, the old man.
Yeah, but even watching that recently, it's like...
It's not like
as
super visible.
I was watching again. I'm like, it's not as intense as it seemed.
In any case, there's... this goes to out to the Laplandic country where there's a little boy and his father living out in the woods. And there's a very small, remote community where they kind of herd reindeer. And this boy's about to... go out on a hunt, I think, or something for it.
Well, they're watching them blow explosives on the mountaintop, and they go through like a fence. But it's basically the time of the year when the reindeer come herding in.
Yes,
and
they come herding in. They're going to harvest them. So you're right, as you mentioned, they were doing some explosives on top of this mountain, and everyone's kind of wondering what's going on. And at a certain point, they notice like the reindeer dying or something. They're like, "What's going on?"
They've been eaten. They've been massacred. Some kind of wild animals, presumably wolves or something, have come in through the fence where the little boy is left pulled open and have eaten the reindeer.
And things just get stranger from there. At a certain point,
they find something
in a pit, and the movie just goes off in a whole different direction. Very, very strangely, and it's very good because you're watching this and you're like, what kind of movie am I watching? Because at a certain point, they find this guy in a pit, and the fathers are all like freaked out about this guy. Like, what are we going to do with him? And you're like, is this going to turn into some kind of like torture movie all of a sudden? Which it thankfully does not.
Not even close. But he kind of looks like a grizzled Santa Claus.
Yeah, a little bit. Looks and like a Santa.
The little boy is concerned because that's what he thinks he's found, is that they have found Santa Claus and that he is evil, because in the Laplandic tradition, Santa Claus was evil. You know, he's boiling children and hitting.
You see scenes of him like reading these books with like great like wood cuttings in them of like.
And then evil he Santa prepares himself by like taping like pads to his butt so Santa Claus can't like whip him and stuff. But where that story goes, you've got the characters perceiving one thing. The parents, the adults perceive one thing. Even the little boy who perceives that this is Santa and these things are happening perceives another. And then there's what's really going on. So. The movie's very well done. It is a fun adventure. It has a feel of the Goonies a lot of times. It even has a kind of milder version of, like, having watched it recently, there's a scene when they get to the blasting site after the blasting's been done that feels almost like John Carpenter's The Thing. Like, really lonely, abandoned, like, areas and stuff when they go up to meet.
And the whole movie, they're all kind of paranoid, like The Thing, of like, what's going on? Can I trust you?
There's a lot of strange scenes, particularly of the old man, who's a very creepy looking old man, who's playing the guy they find in the pit, of him just staring like a vulture, sort of hunched up looking out.
But I think it's interesting what you say, though, because it is very much like a Goonies kind of movie.
It does. Like, there's a lot of like Amblin related time period like movies in there. It's a lot of fun. I think the problem is people go into it for a horror movie are going to ultimately be disappointed if a horror movie is what you want.
It's, not really a
horror
movie.
It's not quite... It's a level where I think a little bit of an older kid could probably handle it, honestly. Yeah, I'd say it's another step above Gremlins. I don't think it's as... I think Gremlins is more benign, honestly, than Rare Exports. I'd say you've got Gremlins here, Rare Exports here, and then Krampus is actually... I would say Krampus is even less appropriate for kids than Rare Exports, story-wise, and everything.
Probably.
I feel like the Rare Exports embraces the child character is a real component of the story. Mm-hmm. In Krampus, he's just another character who's sort of there observing things.
Yes.
And in Rare Exports, it's about, from a kid's perspective. It's definitely from a kid's perspective. Things. A lot of fun. There was, just like I said, in Krampus, there's two little Krampus, there's a big, it doesn't, the movie's so good it doesn't really affect it much, but there was a big missed opportunity in Rare Exports. And you know what I'm talking about. The movie is building and building and building.
Yeah.
And we keep having revelation upon revelation. And this is why it's better if you don't watch a short film. Because you get, after this one disappointment, you get another revelation that like kind of clicks it all together. But there's one moment where they hint at something. That we're going to see something that we don't get to see. And I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah, I was too. But the movie's so good that honestly,
they didn't probably have the budget to deliver this particular item.
Which, you know what, I think is wiser. Some people try to deliver that big scene, and they just don't.
And
have
they
the
get
money.
A big scene though. They go in, they get a big climactic scene anyway.
Yeah,
and they get a nice ending.
I just mean like in general.
But
today,
you're right.
I see a lot of movies where maybe you should have just cut that scene, filmed it a little bit differently, make the story a little bit different, and not have that big scene in because it just looks sloppy.
So I think you're right. They probably made the right choice for the budget they had. Yeah. But you still you sit there and you wonder.
Man, I love that movie. Rare Exports is a rare treat. Good stuff. But if you really want to talk about rare treats, I'd have to say Santa's Sleigh is one of my top.
You mean by rare, is it undercooked? Or
you know what, actually that kind of applies too. I say rare as in not many people have probably seen this one, but in the same sense it is a bit undercooked at times.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say like of the movie,
it's cheesily good. Like it's definitely not a great movie, but it is very entertaining if you're in the right mindset.
It is. It's fun. I'm going to say, and I enjoy it. I've seen like you. I would say it's not good at all. Like it's not good. It's really not. It's almost not a movie. It's almost like 90 minutes of just a
sequences.
Skit. Yeah. This is Santa Slay. SLAY.
That's right.
Which I think they might have even stolen. I think Ernest Saves Christmas had the Santa Slay joke first.
Oh really?
Yeah. We were watching. It goes, no, they're making a movie and it's Santa Slay. And a monster comes out and they shoot it and whatnot. But so this is Bill Goldberg, yes, the Jewish wrestler.
The wrestler,
who
yeah.
is playing a Santa Claus. His costume's cool because it almost looks like a Viking Nordic kind
Viking
of Santa.
Viking warrior Santa Claus.
He has
almost.
A big sort of sled that looks like a Viking shield ship, sort of. And he has a buffalo, an actual buffalo.
They
were called like a hell deer.
They call it the hell deer, but it's just a giant buffalo.
And they have this entire really cracked backstory where Santa was originally like a demon who was tricked.
The son of the devil or something.
Yeah. The son of the devil and the Virgin Jacqueline or something like that. Like
by the Virgin Erica. That's
Erica,
what it was.
The Virgin Erica. It was something ridiculous like some that. Stupid, yeah. And they have they learn all this through the Book of Claws, and they live in a town, the Hell Township, and Santa is coming back because for 1,000 years he's been imprisoned and forced to give children toys, and now he's done and he's angry.
Well, now let's say he's forced to do that over a very nice little almost claymation scene.
Yeah, and I don't want to even discuss how that happens, but and Robert Culp is in the movie, and it's just and Emily DeRaven from Lost is in there without her accent. She's doing a kind of not so good American accent, if you will. But the movie's really just an excuse to have Bill Goldberg have bad one-liners and do crazy, politically incorrect, inappropriate things to Santa Claus. Like wielding a stripper pole as like a bow staff at one point.
But spraying it down first with disinfectant.
That's very true. So it's super silly. There's a scene I don't even want to ruin. The opening scene involves a dinner party.
We talked about that.
Yes, B-list celebrities. Better just to watch it. That's completely the Bah Humbug movie. That's the movie where you just sit and you snicker.
The most joy I get in that movie is from the scene where they're all riding through, and I had kind of forgotten about this until we watched it recently, but they're driving through like the snowy fields on a snowmobile,
and
Santa's like chucking exploding parcels at them.
Most of the scene is shot from the perspective of his hell deer, so it almost looks like Falcor from Neverending Story sort of flying, and there's this happy, dappy music. The movie's production qualities, I mean, it didn't have much of a budget. There's no artistry involved in this thing at all.
No.
It looks like a bad TV. It looks like a sci-fi original.
It should have been.
Every way.
And then it would be perfect.
I'm not certain. But it is fun.
It's
silly.
It
can
be
fun in the right atmosphere. Yeah. It's a pretty bad movie. But it's a fun bad movie.
It's a bad movie that I love. I'm not going to deny it.
That's fair. I'm amused that it exists. Watching it again, I realize I don't really love this, but it is fun to watch, particularly with someone who's not seen it before.
Oh, that's the most fun, yeah.
I mean, I will say this. I think they could legitimately have made an actually good comedy from this concept, but instead they made this movie. But that's maybe enough.
I don't think they could.
From the concept, not necessarily what they went
with
it.
I think having it as a bad, schlocky, kind of thrown together thing as it is probably the best it could achieve too. I don't think you could really shine this turd. You know what I mean? Like you couldn't.
Maybe not.
I don't think it's a diamond in the rough. I just enjoy it for what it is.
It's just it's fun. But you have to be in the right mindset.
Yeah.
It goes by pretty quick. It's
mercifully
disposable.
Some would say.
Yes.
Well, I love that one. What would you like to talk about next?
Well, we're on the Killer Santas. There's a couple we could probably mention. We were talking. I'm going to mention Silent Night, Deadly Night because I feel like that's the one that most people are aware of in the Killer Santa franchise.
Is that the one that's like a franchise or multiple films?
There are. There's about 5 of them.
Wow.
So, and none of them, honestly, I'm not the world's biggest slasher fan. I do enjoy some of them, but they have to be done well. Silent Night, Deadly Night comes out in the 80s, early 80s, and it's just a kind of like, it's a ripoff of a ripoff of a ripoff slasher. I mean, there's not a lot that's notable about it. There are 2 movies that kind of sit, I think, on either side of it that are better, that have similar intentions, but this is your really like psychopath in a Santa suit murdering people. Not really intelligent, not really all that fun, schlocky, but grim and just a little too dark for its own good, I think, in some ways. An interesting note about it, and the sequels are almost universally not good, but there's one I'm going to talk about, which is Silent Night, Deadly Night 5.
Ooh.
And in Silent Night 1, it comes, or Silent Night, Deadly Night, it comes out. I remember specifically Mickey Rooney, who had himself played Santa a few times, was stated as saying, these punks come out and make a movie and do this to Santa. They should be run out of town on a rail or something. Like, very indignant.
Mickey Rooney was a War on Christmas guy?
Not a War on... No, no.
Christmas as in, like, oh my goodness, there's a War on Christmas.
He wasn't saying that. He was saying that these guys... It was the 80s, right? So he's saying, they make a movie where Santa's a murderer. Why do you want to do that? Where's your Christmas spirit? Like, I can see where he's coming from. But here's the...
He himself played a heartless murderer, so...
Well, here's the better twist.
Mickey Rooney is in Silent Night, Deadly Night 5. The toy maker. So this is the twist of the story. Awesome. That somehow, I don't know if he changed his mind, he needed a paycheck. But Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, the toy maker, and maybe this is what happened. Maybe Mickey Rooney didn't know he was making a Silent Night, Deadly Night movie. He may have been making a movie called The Toy Maker that just got slapped with a Silent Night, Deadly Night 5 title, because this happened a lot in the 90s. The House series, a lot of them were just made up of disparate movies that have no connection to one another. And the toy maker he plays a character named Joe Petto. I'm not making this up.
Wow.
Joe Petto. And his son Pino. And
Pino.
I'm not making this up. So you can kind of see where this is going.
Oh my goodness.
We're not sure what Joe's state is here, like whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, but we do know that some of the toys he makes end up getting delivered to kids and they are like killing them, like monstrous evil toys.
Mm.
So not a very good movie. Silent Night, Deadly Night's not a very good movie. They made a remake of sorts in 2012 called Silent Night that I think has Santa with a blowtorch and a machine gun. I have no clue if that's a good movie.
He's out for vengeance.
Something like that. He has sunglasses, too. He's kind of like a Schwarzenegger Santa or something. I don't think that's probably a good movie either. I don't know. I haven't seen it. So I'd say the Silent Night, Deadly Night series, maybe only if you're an evil Santa completist do you need to see that.
I was really brokenhearted today when I looked and I saw that there's all these movies that I haven't seen because I love this genre, subgenre so much. And I was like, there's even a franchise with like 5 movies in it that I haven't even watched. So I feel like as a completionist kind of person that I am, I feel like I'm going to have to hunt these things.
You're going to have to go that one alone, my friend.
Yeah. I can't what? Do you it don't want to do a retrospective?
No. I think Phantasm broke me. but on this side, I think we have Christmas Evil. Which I've talked about in other places. That's kind of an interesting movie. You got this guy who's obsessed with Santa. And it's funny because Silent Night, Deadly Night also has this guy who kind of gets twisted early on in his life and latches onto the Santa figure in a bad, unhealthy way. And Christmas Evil kind of has that where the kid kind of sees his dad and mom. Dad's dressed like Santa and he's like kissing mom's thigh or something. I mean, it doesn't seem like it goes beyond that, but that's enough to mess with this kid's head, apparently.
Yeah.
So he grows up to be a guy who's keeping a ledger of like all the kids in the city and like literally spying on them to make sure they're naughty or nice. And like he works at the toy factory and he has good intentions, but at some point when the adults in his life that want to prevent him from spreading goodness start to like push back, he goes murderous.
And it's not a lot, but like
the violence and the horror in this movie are very low. This is like a weird oddity of a movie.
It's not.
I wouldn't even. It's hard to almost call
it horror.
It's a
weird psychological journey with this guy.
There are moments of horror that certainly belong in a horror film, but I would say the overall tone of this is not Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's not a slasher film,
and
really at all. There's maybe 1-2 deaths, not much.
That's right.
It has a ridiculous ending.
It does.
It has an off-the-wall ending that makes you smile. At least it made me smile. Yeah. I like it. It's a weird movie. It reminds me of what, like, that kind of grimy 1980s going to the general store where Santa was there, you know? Like, there's something about it that connects to the 80s. That early 80s where you're coming out of the 70s into the 80s pretty well. Mm. It has a weird surreal feeling. There's a point when there are people chasing him through the street, almost like a Frankenstein film.
Yeah.
With like almost like the torches, the villagers and the torches kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a nutty little movie. And I really enjoyed it. The ending, especially, like you said, is crazy and puts a smile on even the coldest heart.
Yeah. The other one I think of that sits on the other side of that, the same, has similar feeling in terms of tone and atmosphere, is Black Christmas, which was 1974, directed by Bob Clark, who goes on to make A Christmas Story in 1983. So he has two very different end of the spectrum movies. Although if you watch them both, you can kind of see the similarities. Now, I think what's interesting here, Chris, is you've not seen 74 Black Christmas, but you've seen the 2006 version, which you tell me by all accounts is terrible.
It's not very good, no.
So the 74 movie is actually a pretty good movie. I think it ends up being kind of what we would call maybe the proto or pre-slasher movie, because if you're like me, I kind of consider Halloween seems to be where we definitively had something that emerged as a template for a slasher.
I kind of count Dementia 13.
Well, Dementia 13
even some of Val Lewton's early movies like The Leopard Man, Black Christmas, they're all kind of like proto-slashers in that they have a lot of these elements. But Dimension 13 and Enemy Black Christmas, they seem to draw almost from the Italian giallo movies a little bit. Mm-hmm. Seems when we got Halloween, we had something that was very distinctly, here's the template. Like when Friday the 13th shows up, when some of these other slashers show up, they're very clearly following Halloween. The only reason I mention it, I feel like Dimension 13 has a little more to offer than just mm-hmm. the slasher movie.
That's true.
It has almost that like Agatha Christie, Ten Little Indians
a little bit,
feel to it, which is distilled, becomes the slasher. But Black Christmas probably goes more to like Italian giallo movies. It's weird because I was surprised to see that Margot Kidder is in the movie.
Really?
Only a few years before Superman, yeah. And she's in the film. There's a couple other actors as you're going through you see that you recognize. Well, that's cool. John Saxon, who plays
You said Miss Deagle, too, earlier.
Yeah. She has a small cameo in it. John Saxon, who is the lieutenant or police chief in Nightmare on Elm Street, he's almost the same role in this film.
Really?
Yeah. And then Keir Della from 2001 A Space Odyssey plays Dave Bowman. He's in the movie as one of the potential suspects.
That's crazy.
So I won't say much about it, but you've got the sorority house at Christmas time. Christmas, to be fair to Black Christmas, Christmas is more of like a add-on here. It's more like the setting. It's a Christmas movie, but my wife and I were both talking, Jen and I were talking how we were wrapping Christmas presents while we watched this thing. We had kids are out of the house. And we had both never seen it. We were commenting on how Christmas is sort of a, kind of it's the wrapping paper, if you will, but it isn't really deep into the theme of the movie. The theme of the movie and what it's about could happen at any time of the year. It just so mm-hmm. happens that it's taking place at Christmas. Christmas makes it nice and convenient to explain why these sorority girls are sort of wandering around and there's not a lot of oversight because it's the off season, if you will. Gotcha. You know, everyone's out from college and are on winter break. Mm-hmm. So the killer, whoever he is, could be wandering around and has a little more freedom than if it were school's in session, all the teachers are around, things like that.
Gotcha.
So you have some of them being murdered. And one of the things I've noticed about some of the early slasher films, they have this thing that I always think is cool, but it doesn't always apply to later movies because they want to get as wild as possible, as quick as possible. Where some of the older movies, you'd have one or two people die, and the main characters won't even know they're dead. They just assume they're missing. So what it means is the killer's out here killing people, but several of the characters don't know it. So they're just walking. Even Halloween is like that for a little while. Like Jamie Lee Curtis, like Laurie Strode is watching kids and seeing a shadow here. They're unaware that her friends are being killed around her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no understanding that there's danger until like the very last minute. And Black Christmas is doing a lot of that. A couple things I'll say about it. Very well shot. Does an interesting job of keeping the killer hidden while hinting at things. And even at the end, slasher movies, even if you go all the way back to Psycho, where Hitchcock almost has to stop, sit down, and explain to you who Norman Bates is, what happened, the plot. You know, it's almost like point by point by point. Black Christmas, at least the 74 version, leaves a lot to your imagination about exactly what is happening, what's going on, in a way that I think respects the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good because it doesn't go full slasher. It's got some kills. It's got some suspense. It's a little more hard edge than I would have expected for a 74 R-rated film. But I think you'd like it. There's a lot of atmosphere there.
I feel like I would.
It's legitimately creepy to me.
I feel like I really need to check that out because I did see the Black Xmas version from 2006. And that did not have any air of mystery to it. They explained everything that was going on.
That's so funny because that is definitely not this movie. This borrows heavily from giallo movies, mm-hmm. except the part where giallo movies just go buck and lose all sense of being.
This, at different points, has very weird scenes that like kind of goes bucks and nuts. I will give you that. But I didn't really super enjoy it. It had a weird obsession with the removal of eyeballs. I don't know what that's about, but that happens to a lot of people. but yeah, there's some interesting scenes. Like, it's got a really very strange backstory, so it goes into detail on like who the killer is and how he was brought up and why he is what he is.
That's amazing, because I don't want to say anything more about Black Christmas, but that is that's an anathema to what Black Christmas does.
Yeah, that's like what it sounded like.
It was
interesting.
Because, yes, it almost feels like...
It went out of its way to like really...
I haven't seen it, but based on what you just said, it sounds like someone watched Black Christmas, became frustrated over a couple of elements, and said, I'm going to fix this. and then failed to do so.
Maybe so.
So, and those, to me, that's pretty much, I think, that's the newest, in a sense, meaning the most recent that I've seen, that I hadn't seen. That's kind of what I've got. Am I missing anything?
Well, I mean, I know we should talk about last year they put out another one that it seems, for whatever reason, to be popular with people, because a lot of people I've talked to are like, oh, yeah, I love this movie. A Christmas Horror Story.
So there are really people that say, I love this movie?
You'd be surprised. I got a lot of people I know are like, this was a great movie.
So, and this is on Netflix. So, yeah, I think this is where we can probably kind of start to wrap the show up and kind of talk about movies that we have, you know, they're kind of on the periphery that still serve as the Christmas horror movie or genre movie. And that's Christmas Horror Story. It's on Netflix right now. It has a great cover. The cover is Santa Claus fighting the Krampus with, like, his staff or something.
Wrestling style, like, Krampus.
Yeah, this is a big buff Krampus. This is like Santa's sleigh mixed with Krampus. I mean, he's this big, buff, goat-looking guy. Christmas. What's interesting about this is Michael Dougherty makes the Krampus movie.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Kevin Smith does not make his Krampus movie. Because I think that would... He was going to make an anthology Krampus movie.
Oh, really?
And it was called Comes the Krampus or something. I don't know. It sounded silly. And he ends up not really being able to do it because Dougherty kind of beats him to the punch and makes this. Christmas Horror Story, which is very low budget affair, gets kind of made in the interim there or in the sideline somewhere, though it is a bit higher budget than some of the other Krampus movies. I remember when we interviewed Bill Oberst Jr. for Abraham Lincoln vs. Zombie several years ago.
Yes.
He was that time making a movie called Krampus the Christmas Devil, and now there's a sequel to that one and I have not seen it. But those are very low-budget movies. There's a couple of low-budget Krampus movies. This one's like an anthology. What's weird is this is more what I would have expected, not necessarily in quality, but in concept. This is what I would expect from Michael Dougherty because it's closer to Trick or Treat.
Yeah, it is.
It's an anthology, takes place around a little town. It has a character in this movie. It's William Shatner as a drunken, like, DJ, kind of Don Imus shock jock kind of guy.
I like to imagine that's what Bill Shatner does with his downtime. He sits at home and has a fake radio set.
Instead of radio, he uses YouTube. I mean, that is pretty much who Bill Shatner is now. But he sits around. He's kind of intoxicated. He's talking crap about people. He's telling us that the town is a strange place. And we see this borne out through, what, four or five... There's actually a lot of stories involved. I want to say... There's one involving kids who go into an old abandoned school that was a scene of a murder, and that gets into
asylum or something.
Yeah, it gets into a very weird aspect of the Christmas story. Like, it kind of deals with the Christmas story in a very weird, kind of subversive way.
Yeah.
The concept's cool. I don't think the execution's good.
No.
The other problem
to me was the sloppiest and like, most forgettable of all the stories.
The stories are broken up, so you have that. You have another story about a family who goes into the woods to get a Christmas tree and they kind of lose track of their son for a little bit. And then he's back, but something's clearly wrong. And it kind of plays off of those changeling stories you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. I'd say that one's not particularly good either.
No.
Creepy in concept. And like you said, sloppy in execution.
Yeah.
There's a story of a family that kind of reminds me of a movie we recently talked about. Another Christmas movie called Dead End, which also, to me, wasn't that good. Where a family is headed somewhere and they're bickering and they get caught up in themselves. And not unlike Krampus. And then they get... in this one, they actually do meet the Krampus along the way. The Krampus is involved in this story. This one's a little better. It still didn't quite work for me. I liked the character of the Krampus. Like, he does get to do things in this short film, but not much there either.
No.
And then, am I missing? I know I'm missing
the
something.
Last one is the is the culmination of all of them. And the whole time, Bill Shatner's going, "Well, there's something weird going down at the mall. I'll check in with y'all later."
So we have his story involving
the mall Santa and some
but
strange
But then there's
things.
One that doesn't have any bearing on the other four, which is where Santa Claus himself is at the North Pole, a fantastical North Pole, with elves, and they are infected and turning into zombies, and he's fighting them.
Foul-mouthed little zombies, too.
And
they're all, like,
cursing. That story seems so far off from the others that I'm sort of like, I just throw my hands up in the air. I mean, there is a interesting way in which all this is connected, which I would say is the best part of the movie.
Yes.
But as you're watching the movie, that part is just way off. Like, it takes you... The other stories aren't all that interesting, but it keeps taking you out of it. because it just seems so weird. Like, there's Santa, he's running through, you see it, it looks like, again, we talk about Tolkien or something, it looks like a great city, and like, not great special effects, but at one point he's at his stables, and, you know, he's certain that Krampus is doing this, and he's going to have to fight him, and it feels like a fantasy
showdown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a weird fantasy movie mixed with a zombie infection movie, and you're sitting there thinking, how is this fitting into everything? But when this movie ends, even though the very end has an interesting spin on everything, that spin actually makes the movie fall more apart, because you look at it and you're like, how does any of this make sense? Because characters from one part of the story are playing part of another story, but when we understand the perspective of that story, we're like, well, how can these characters both be here,
it's kind of shoddy,
and there? It's just not well put together.
I feel like this is a movie that I should have liked more, but it was so poorly put together that I just didn't enjoy it.
No, I mean, there's a promise, but there was a bad execution.
This is what I mean by there's people that love this. It's because there's people that I've talked to that do love the movie. It's a common thing that you see people love movies when it has a specific theme of something they're interested in, regardless of the quality of the movie itself. That's what my problem is.
Yeah, so this, and I think there's a good point, there's a lack of good Christmas movies, so we get this one, and it just isn't up to snuff. I wasn't
interested. But because it exists, people will love it.
There are things that you might like, and I will say this, as a horror fan, you might enjoy it. Maybe you'll be able to look. I know some people, they have that thing, hey, if one or two stories of an anthology is good, they like it. I couldn't personally find a single story I really liked. There was some stuff going on with that Shatner storyline that I enjoyed.
There were a couple like mediocre stories that were all right, but the rest of them were like just disappointing to me.
Yeah, agreed. That's... I hate to end on a down note like that. There's a couple of other small movies
we could mentioned. Talk about Saint if you want, but that would be
Saint
even more
is, Saint note. Is really ridiculous. That's a Santa Claus and Black Pete. It has a feeling of a like low, like it's weird. It's almost a mix between a spoof and a John Carpenter movie from like The Fog or something.
Almost.
But it's like an evil Santa running on his death horse or whatever, like a long
murdering the town.
Yeah, it's your basic. It is a kind of that's closer to a slasher really than some of
with
the others.
This one now it does have fantasy elements because it's like you see, you know, Santa Claus running along and he's on top of a horse running across rooftops.
If Rare Exports...
It's got a mixture of, like, fantasy with the just slasher.
If Rare Exports draws on The Thing, this is drawing on The Fog. Carpenter's The Fog
That's fair.
Probably the template for this movie in the way that the Santa Claus
Certain
is introduced.
Elements, I would say, yes.
Well, I'm not talking about The Fog itself, but the way the people interact with it, the main characters, and how he and the Black Peters come into town and kind of take people out, and their trajectory, and even how he's defeated at the end, where it's all headed... I just recently watched The Fog, and it has that same kind of feel where, like, in that one you have the ghost pirates, but they kind of show up slowly. They have a mythology to them. So it seems like they were telegraphing elements that Carpenter used to make that movie. Not that it's the same movie, not it's the same theme, but that, like, shots in that movie are almost made self-consciously to acknowledge, like, some scenes in Rare Exports feel like they're made to acknowledge, I've seen The Thing. You know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So I think there's fun movies out there to see. As we mentioned,
I see there's a lot of work for me out there.
Well, I don't know how much they're worth, how much it's worth. So there's a lot of Santa movies I don't know that are up to snuff. And there's Christmas movies that maybe aren't related to Santa Claus out there. I would say, so I would also recommend a movie called Windchill with Emily Blunt, which is maybe only nominally Christmas because it takes place at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a story. She's going home for the holidays. She takes a ride home with someone she doesn't really know, a guy, and she's riding home, and she starts to realize that there's more going on here with him than she originally figured, and that maybe she shouldn't have got into this car. That's one aspect. Then the car breaks down. Then they're on this road in the middle of nowhere, and it's a road haunted by a bunch of ghosts.
Mm.
So there's a lot going on in that.
Interesting.
And it's a fun, to me, creepy, effective movie. So plenty of stuff out there. I'd say, you know, if you haven't seen some of these, I think most of the ones we've mentioned, I'd say even Christmas Horror Story, if you're looking for, and you know what we didn't even mention, which is all the Scrooge movies, as we said before, were ghost stories. There's some good versions of those out there.
Yeah.
Even some that are creepy. Scrooge with Bill Murray is not one that's creepy, but it's fun, and it probably has a few more horror elements than some of the others. I'd say even the Jim Carrey animated one, just watching my kids, that has what?
Can't agree with you there.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, okay. But there's only one Christmas Story to me. That's the one with George C. Scott.
George C. Scott, well, that's what I was going to say. I was setting up the Jim Carrey one. I'm just saying in terms of horror elements, like creepier elements, it with some of the CGI and stuff is not as effective. But, I mean, it had like Marley's jaws falling off and stuff like that. Like there's a death, like the scene where the Ghost of Christmas Present opens his cloak and you see the like ignorance and want, the two little children. Like they're like Gollum-y little things that scrabble after. And then you just see the Ghost of Christmas Present literally deteriorates into a dried skeleton right in front of Scrooge. So there's creepy elements in that. I'd say George C. Scott version is better. I love that George C. Scott's such a blustery Scrooge.
Yes.
He's blustery in every way. Even when, to me, what makes a Scrooge movie, and this is why the Carrey one isn't effective, because that motion capture doesn't really allow you to get the exuberance when Scrooge becomes, when he, you know, spoiler, when he becomes happy, when he becomes the good man that he's on his trajectory to be, you have to have a Scrooge that's really, like, just reveling in it. And Scott's almost scarier as the happy Scrooge. Because you're like, is he going to eat Tiny Tim? I mean, he's so... When the scene that is, like, the one that sells it for me in a Scrooge movie is when his housekeeper sees him for the first time. And he runs downstairs, and she's frightened because she doesn't know what he's doing. And Scott is, like, lumbering around like a bear and waving his arms in the air. I mean, he's a good Scrooge. My favorite is the version with Alistair Sim, Scrooge, like from 1950. I think it's some cases called Christmas Carol, some cases just called Scrooge. He's really good in it. The ghosts are creepy in it. That's probably my all-time favorite version. But there's a lot of good versions of that out there, too. Mm-hmm. So, but we will see you next time, everyone. Have a very happy and merry Christmas.
Yes.
Enjoy the holidays. Chris, any parting words?
Just hope everybody has a great holiday with their family.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Take care, everyone. Have a good night.
A spot of haddock wouldn't go amiss.